Welcome to the Polygamer Podcast, where gaming is for everyone. Join us as we expand the boundaries of the gaming community.
Hello and welcome to the Polygamer Podcast, episode number 82 for Wednesday, October 17th, 2018. I'm your host, Ken Gagne. I have a YouTube channel of my own, and I have always marveled at people who do it so much better than me, and that includes today's guest. Whether you're doing theory videos, let's plays, or whether you're doing social media, Instagram, there's so much I have to learn from guests such as today's, which are Stacy and Mari of YouTube channel Geek Remix. Hello.
Hello. My name's Mari.
And I'm Stacy.
They need to know the differences in our voices.
They will still mix us up, I'm sure.
But we tried. We're connected.
Well, I'm so glad both of you could join me tonight. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
You're welcome.
Thank you for being had. So, for those few listeners who somehow have not gotten the good word of Geek Remix, what is Geek Remix?
I think at the very core of it, we're just two ladies yelling about things. And just every chance we get using our platform to tell people why they're wrong. No, I think it's more about trying to make a space where everybody can feel relaxed.
Except for Trump supporters.
When I make content, I try my best to envision somebody coming home from work, like a gay person or whatever, and they have to deal with the standard everyday bullshit. And when they come home, they just want to listen to something without having to do that thing where they just have to ignore something that annoys them. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So I feel like what we often think about is, what we often hear from people is, I'll be sitting there enjoying like my favorite YouTube channel or whatever. And then one of the people will say something misogynistic or racist or homophobic or whatever. And I have to just kind of be like, ugh. And we try really hard not to do that. And also when people tell us that we screw up, to try to do better in the future. Because obviously everybody makes mistakes.
Yeah, there's so many different points of view in the world that are impossible to know about until someone is like, yeah, okay, cool. Like, I'm going to tell you this. And I feel comfortable enough with your personality to be able to tell you that. Because I think a lot of people, they have a hard time talking to certain people who are like, if you don't like it, then just move on. And then you feel rejected by the... Now, I don't want to say celebrity.
A creator that you enjoy.
Yeah. I guess at the same time, we're not very open to people who are bigots, but I guess I don't want to be. So.
Yeah.
So you're creating a safe space on your YouTube channel, which by definition has to exclude certain forms of speech or certain personalities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess the quote, the only way to have complete tolerance is to be intolerant of the intolerance.
Yes.
Is that the right quote? I don't know.
Yeah, that's that philosopher guy.
Yeah.
They were like the only one.
That smart guy. That smart guy. He said the smart thing.
Well, it's true because intolerance, the definition of intolerance is the idea that other voices are not welcome at the table. And you can't invite that opinion to the table along with others.
Mm-hmm. Basically, our only rule is to be cool. Whatever you're doing, if it doesn't hurt other people, you can do it.
So in the many YouTube videos that you create, whether they're Let's Plays or theory videos, would you say that your channel is pushing an agenda? Is it there to entertain? Are you advocating for social justice? What is the main goal of Geek Remix?
I think... Were you going to say something?
Go ahead.
Okay.
I know you wrote out your points beforehand, so go ahead.
No, I'm not going to do it. What's your opinion, Stacey?
What I like to do with our content is, first and foremost, I think we like to play games that make us think about things, whether it's the game itself or political issues or whatnot. We play a lot of story-based games, a lot of narrative-driven games. We like to play games that foster conversation between the two of us because it's when we tend to produce our best work. I don't think I ever sit there and I think, I want to spread the message of social justice. But naturally, in most of the games that we play, this stuff comes up. Like, you know, Life is Strange 2. There's a lot of things that come up. Detroit Become Human, as much as everybody, you know, crapped on that game, it brought up a lot of conversations, and which continued in the comment sections of our videos, that I think that when people come to us, they know that we're not going to shy away from talking about those things. We're not just going to play the game and tell a couple dick jokes, which we will do that.
The dick jokes will come. Yes. Do not worry.
But we will also try to talk about, you know, our experiences with LGBT issues or mental health, like things that come up in the topics of these games. And I also think that because a lot of our commentary comes from our personal experience, even if the game isn't necessarily delving too deep into the conversation, that we end up going there anyway. Like, the mental health stuff is such a big thing because I feel like not a lot of people talk openly about it. That has always really been a part of our platform since the both of us have mental health issues. I mean, we met in mental health treatment, so... Mm-hmm.
Forged in fire.
Yeah.
What sort of games bring up those topics of mental health?
I'm working on a script about mental health depictions in video games. The majority of the time, with some recent exceptions, mental health is displayed as this uncontrollable force that causes people to do the scary things that we don't understand.
Yeah.
Truth be told, the majority of people who struggle with mental health, even with things like we assume will cause erratic behavior like schizophrenia and stuff, don't act out violently.
Mm-hmm.
And
I mean, just look at how many times mental health is used as a trope in horror video games.
Yeah.
You know?
And while I understand the trope and I still enjoy the games, I understand also that not everybody is coming from that game realizing that game is fiction.
Yeah.
So in Outlast and stuff like that, and I think The Evil Within and mm-hmm. Remothered in some ways was insulting. It often is that the mental health is something that just explains something that's scary.
Yeah.
And hopefully, as time goes on, especially with Setsuna's sacrifice. What's her name?
Senua's
sacrifice.
Are you talking about Hellblade?
Hellblade, yeah. Yeah. The game we're both too afraid to play.
Yeah.
Because it would be weird. That changes.
So it sounds like games don't have a very good track record for representing these healthy tropes.
Yeah, I don't... Can you think of a good example?
I think that was the only good example. And apparently it's such a good example that you can't play it if you actually struggle with
situation. So I'm not sure if you're familiar with the game, but one of the... The game is, you know, in part a story of a woman who is struggling with mental health.
She has auditory hallucinations.
Yes. So she has auditory hallucinations. And I remember our followers were asking us, you know, are you going to play this? Because it's all about mental health. It's supposed to be like, you know, a pretty, you know, strong depiction of it, and not in a horror game kind of way, but in like a, wow, like, look at this incredible thing that people go through. Me specifically, having actually had auditory hallucinations, I was like, that is great that they did this. I don't want to play it because I'm just, you know.
It might be a trigger.
Yeah.
Which is fine. Like, we both appreciate it for the beautiful thing that it is, and it's teaching people something new. And maybe we're completely wrong because we never played the game, but I know that they did research and actually interviewed people with schizophrenia and everything, and tried their best to have a healthy depiction of mental health. And I appreciate that.
I mean, it's still a depiction of struggle, but it's not in the...
I'm a danger. It's more of like they're a hero.
It's not exploitative, yeah.
Yeah. It's a struggle they overcome rather than it being a reason why they're dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a really good representation to people who don't struggle with that so they can fully understand it as not something scary, but something that can be overcome.
I think one of the challenges of depicting mental health in games, including with Hellblade, is that often mental health, sometimes even in a good depiction of mental health, because you're putting it into a video game sense, you can present it as like a challenge that you beat as opposed to something that you're still going to struggle with day to day, that there is no quote unquote beating it. Mm-hmm. It's something, you know, I have bipolar disorder. It's something that I'm going to have for the rest of my life. And I cannot, you know, play some sort of game to get through it and then it's gone. It's just, it's kind of something that you learn to deal with. That's one of the struggles, I think, with depicting it, because you want there to be some sort of victory state because mm-hmm. it's a game, and that can be kind of a challenge.
And talking about it isn't always actually that easy. I remember I made a theory video about Outlast 2 before it came out, and I went through all of the in-universe rules about how they approach mental health mm-hmm. and gender and everything, because I was using the in-game rules for it. And basically, it's that they use people who struggle with mental health as an easier way to be exploited with this monster machine thing. Mm-hmm. And then after I was done making the theory, I was like, okay, I should add at the end, you know, this isn't real life. In real life, people are different. And then in the back of my head, I was like, I know that this is going to make people just not like the whole video, because I'm going to make what they perceive as a social justice thing.
Yes.
But I also know that it's important for me to do. And sometimes I have to make videos where I have to say that because I think it's the right thing to do. And I'm just like, oh, I'm going to get yelled at so much for this. And from my perspective, and it could be wrong, I got that video 100% correct. And when the game came out and they're like, oh, all these reasons why, like, they foreshadowed it, I didn't get any credit for pointing out those reasons. They're like, the fan community, and they just point to someone else who made something similar way after me. And I was just like, I have more views. There's no way that other person, you didn't see me say that. Mm-hmm. And I, like, posted it everywhere, and it just made me feel like maybe the reason why people didn't give me the coverage was because of the thing I said at the end. Because I figured sometimes it just feels that way, mm-hmm. where people don't want to validate the rest of a video or the rest of my work because I'm like, hey, you know, but in real life, mental illness is very different, and in real life, gender doesn't work that way. So, mm-hmm. I don't know, it was frustrating.
Still, I think you made the right decision. You had to stand by the values that are important to you that you need to embody in your videos. You're not going to put something out there just because it's popular. You're going to do it because it's something that you stand by. And you ultimately, even though you didn't get the credit for that video, it's still a video that you can stand by.
It is. And I think the point I'm trying to make is that a lot of people think that being politically correct is selling out or catering to a certain amount of people. But in reality, when we say things that are politically correct, or even just like, hey, Nazis are bad and stuff like that, people will leave or hate us.
Yes.
So it's not as popular as people perceive it to be.
I feel like it's interesting because, you know, there is an audience that wants that safe space and who wants the politically correct or like social justice, however you want to put it. But it's the same thing with being female YouTubers. There are people who are going to positively respond to it. And then there's also people who are not going to like it specifically because of that.
Mm-hmm. And it's not as neutral as being a man.
Yeah. And especially in like the gaming space on YouTube, I feel like sometimes people think that the social justice stuff or like that being women, it gets you like some sort of brownie points. But that is really only with like, you know, like a core group of people that we would consider in our audience, and people outside of that, like, they don't really, you know,
they don't. Sometimes just being something makes you non-neutral. So I think the reason why on YouTube, straight white men gain the biggest audiences, or at least people who present as straight white men. I don't know how people are in their private lives, and I'm sorry for making assumptions. There's as neutral as possible. So they're basically giving out an opinion. It's not an opinion to be who you are, but people perceive it this way. Mm-hmm. You're being as neutral as possible, therefore turning away as few people as possible. Which is why when I hear, much larger gaming YouTubers than ourselves, sometimes people ask, hey, why aren't you, like, saying anything about this racist thing that happened in the video game? Mm-hmm. They say, well, I just choose not to say anything because it's just going to result in a bunch of people in the comments being mad that he even acknowledged it.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes the best course of action in terms of gaining followers and stuff is just to be blank slate that other people can assume your opinions for you.
Yeah.
As soon as you are something that deviates from the norm, aka a white straight man, makes some people feel like alienated.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like, you know, we're both in the queer community. And so, like, a lot of the things that we bring up in our videos is related to, like, the LGBT plus space. And even though we've talked about it before, how, you know, just, like, existing shouldn't be a political statement. But to some people it is, because you're different from how they are,
mm-hmm.
you know? So obviously there's going to be people that respond positively to our mentions of queer media in the space. But there's also going to be people who view that as a negative. Whereas if you never acknowledge that stuff at all, then you're presenting a much
More neutral.
It's kind of, you know, like how we talk about how video games will have, like, kind of like a blank slate protagonist that the player can then project themselves onto.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, like, the more you create a protagonist that has either strong opinions or, like, things in their
back, just isn't the industry standard,
people might, a certain group of people are going to identify with that much more strongly. But there are also people that will be turned off by it.
Yeah. I think in the world we live in today, we live in a society.
In a world.
People who are minoritized, is that the right word, Stacey?
What?
People who are
marginalized?
Marginalized. Oh my God.
Minoritized?
Marginalized groups like people of color, LGBT+, people with mental health, they're expected to accept the norm as a way to watch media. Like, everybody's gonna watch a show with a straight white male lead, and we're just going to accept that.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
marginalized
people would just accept that.
Well, it's kind of like, you know, how there's gonna be so many people will watch, like, a movie about a straight romance,
uh-huh.
but then, like, if you have a queer romance, you're like, there are people who are like, oh no, like, we won't watch that because that's a queer movie.
But gay people are expected to still enjoy the straight romance.
Yes.
But straight people, they're like, what do you mean I have to enjoy the gay romance?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Does that make sense, what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. That when you are outside the mainstream, you limit your audience, whether that is the content you're producing or even simply who you are. Is that basically?
Well, if you are a part of outside the mainstream, you're expected to still enjoy the mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, that's your only option. It's either you enjoy the mainstream or you get nothing. You know?
Well, it's kind of like, how they've, you know, the whole debate over having video game protagonists that are, you know, people of color or women or whatever. And you have certain groups of people that are like, well, like, how am I supposed to play that? And it's like, well, but these, like, marginalized groups have been playing, like, straight white male characters this whole time. And, like, they were just expected
To
accept that and to identify with it. Not that I'm saying there's any, I think there's plenty of games for everybody to have their story.
Yeah.
Like, there's thousands of games put out every year. There's plenty of room for more stories.
Yeah, and I think the way to change that is to do what the industry is doing now, and by introducing more characters that are not white or not straight or not neurotypical and stuff, so mm-hmm. that the new normal, normal in terms of society, not in what actual normal is. The new standard is much wider, much bigger, and people are more willing in general to
experience stories outside their own.
Yeah, to experience stories outside their own. Because there's plenty, tons of straight white dudes. This is not an attack on straight white dudes. You're beautiful creatures who want to see an experience outside of their own. And I think that some people are really vocal about not wanting things to change
mm-hmm.
for a multitude of reasons.
Vocal minority.
Vocal minority. Well, yeah. I'm just trying not to put to make straight dudes feel attacked right now.
No, well, I actually wasn't even saying straight white dudes. I just think it's like, because it's not even that group. It's like a part of that group.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a, like, you don't even really want to, like, generalize in terms of, like, oh, it's all dudes, because it's definitely not.
It's not all dudes.
It's, like, a small segment who are just very loud and like to agitate that, like, this is the way things have always been and this is the way things should stay.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think saying that it's, like, a very small vocal group of people is, yeah.
No, I think that's accurate, because I'm certainly not one to use the not all men hashtag, but there are a lot of allies out there and a lot of people, for better or worse, for whom this isn't even an issue for them. I did a podcast episode a few years ago where I brought on several people who are gamers but are not engaged in the gaming community, and I asked each one of them, what is Gamergate? And none of them knew, really. And when I explained it to them, they said, that's actually happening. Because these are people who go to GameStop, buy their game, bring it home, and play it. And that is the extent of their experience. They don't listen to podcasts. They don't get on social media. They don't read magazines. So why would they have heard about this? Because it doesn't affect the majority of individuals' gameplay experiences. And so I understand that, yeah, it is the vocal minority who are, you know, shitting all over the place for everybody else.
I find that really fascinating that they hadn't heard of Gamergate. I can totally picture it, though, because if you're not like all over social media, I mean, Gamergate at one point did
New York Times, right?
Yeah, penetrate into like mainstream media sources. But if you're not really if you're not really paying attention to that, why would you have heard of it?
My parents were like, oh, I heard about this Gamergate. And I was like, oh, no.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I mean, it just didn't penetrate a lot of mainstream media, you know, and even though we can now trace things that are happening in today's politics back to it, it's still not something that's on mainstream consciousness, because, yeah, you know, it's gaming, and mainstream media, for the large part, still doesn't take gaming seriously, unfortunately.
I think it's interesting how the mainstream media only gets the loudest parts of our controversies, and then it just totally screws us. Like when PewDiePie makes big mistakes over and over again and he won't stop. And then YouTube was destroyed after it.
Yes.
Thanks, PewDiePie. It's your fault. I said it. This is the only safe place I can.
So with all these controversies and all these media that you're producing that may or may not be mainstream, are you concerned about your channel being entertaining or being fun? Because I would hope that at some level, video games still are fun. Is that something that you try to make a part of the content you produce?
So, interestingly, we just wrapped up a Let's Play for Shadow of the Tomb Raider. And in that game, as with the rest of the series, there are obviously some, like, problematic elements that we pointed out throughout the Let's Play, right?
Yeah, but we made it fun.
Exactly. But one of the things that we try to point out, and that I feel like I am trying more and more to tell people, is that, hey, like, when we point out these issues, you can still enjoy this. Like, we're going to point out the problems,
mm-hmm.
and then we're going to go back to telling jokes. And, you know, if you're sitting there watching, like, your favorite movie and they tell a sexist joke, you can say to yourself, hey, that's sexist, and still really like the movie. It's okay.
It's okay to point out that there's something wrong with something you love. Because if you don't point it out, the people who make it don't know to improve,
mm-hmm.
if that makes sense. I know that there's a lot of developers who do listen to fan feedback and who try to change their stories to reflect if they hear, like, oh, you know, this character, you know, it's not as sensitive to this certain topic. And it might be that they just didn't know.
Well, look at the Mass Effect Andromeda thing. They patched out a conversation from the game because it was, you know, not seen very well by people who were like, hey, that's not very sensitive to trans people.
Yeah, they, like, were trying to be inclusive, they and were, they're like, messed it up.
And they messed it up, and people let them know, and then they ended up patching that conversation out of the game because they were like, oh, like, we can do better than that, and that's, like, a fix that we can make right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so not every game is obviously going to have the ability to do that in real time. But when developers make their next game, such as from the first Life is Strange to the second Life is Strange, first Life is Strange covers, for the most part, a bunch of white girls.
Mm-hmm.
And then
they did cover LGBT plus stuff.
Correct. But one of the things that people said was, hey, like, it'd be really great to see, you know, more people of color in the series. Like, that would be really great.
Yeah, a lot of the issues was like, I was like, I love your story. I respect everything you do. And I love the way you did it. Using spirit animals in the United States is kind of insulting to people who are Native American. Just like, and they were like, yeah, and the Native Americans got on great with the settlers. And we're like, no, that's not true, French studio.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's not how it went. So I think in Life is Strange 2, they hired a bunch of people to help them make a story about a Mexican-American experience. And they tried really hard to have an authentic thing, and I think they did a lot of research,
mm-hmm.
and they hired people who are actually Latino to be the voice actors for the Mexican-American characters, and I thought that was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
So they made a lot of improvements based on fan feedback saying, hey, these are the things, I love your game so much, but here's the things that I don't like. And I think that makes a difference.
I'm really looking forward to playing Life is Strange 2. I've installed it on my PS4, haven't gotten around to it yet. I'm still actually halfway through the Awesome Adventures of Captain Spirit.
Aww.
I loved the original Life is Strange. And if you can be spoiler-free, if you can, how was the sequel? Is it as great as the first one, if not better?
I cried so hard I might have been traumatized.
Yeah, we both really liked how Life is Strange 2 is starting off. I think I'm just so excited to see them take on a different type of story. Not that, like, obviously I loved the first one and I liked Before the Storm, but I feel like they're taking this story in a different direction. And it's what I was hoping for, was that they wouldn't just try to, like, rehash the same formula of the mm-hmm. first game, that they would really look to new characters, new type of story. Let's see where this goes. That they would still have a lot of really, you know, impactful, emotional moments, which is what made the first game so great to me, was that they made you feel really invested in the characters and in the story. You know, you don't always play a narrative game and feel so, I don't know, just like so,
my
like,
babies,
so like emotionally gut punched over things that happen.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the things that made the story with the male protagonist so powerful is that they allowed Daniel, the main character, to be emotional, to react to things as if he's devastated. He's allowed to cry. He cries a few times, which is something you very rarely see with male protagonists. I made a video recently called Are Male Protagonists Boring? And I basically go into male protagonists are not boring, but we tend to not allow them to show emotion, which tends to make them not be as interesting. And we give emotional leads to women, like female leads.
Mm-hmm.
The developers, when they want to show an emotional game, they give the lead to a female character because we allow them to cry and we allow them to be hurt. But if we want a game that's more tough guy, we have them be a dude and they don't react to things like their entire family dying or like horrible things happening, and they just go, I am sad. Here's metaphors.
Mm-hmm.
So, but when we allow male characters to be emotional, it's very powerful, like with Joel in The Last of Us or Daniel in Life is Strange 2 in Blank Things That Happen.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason why you're able to understand the emotional gravity of the situations that happen in Life is Strange 2 is because you can empathize with how Daniel is reacting and how Sean is reacting, and they build up those emotional moments, because presentation of a bad thing happening is just as important as the writing of it happening.
Mm-hmm.
You need to be able to see someone be sad so you can empathize with them.
Wow, that's really great to hear that they allow their male protagonist to be emotional. I think that's really important, and it sets precedent. It allows the audience to see that kind of behavior and know that it's okay, and to see it modeled in a healthful fashion as an alternative, especially to the toxic masculinity that is so rampant, not just in video games, but in almost all our media.
Yeah, I thought it was really great. I mean, there's so many things that they cover, and I think if we had a trigger warning, we could have been a little bit more calloused going in, but we didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And 'cause we had some personal experiences were similar to his experiences, which was kind of hard at some points. And I also talked to some other reviewers, and they were like, oh, yeah, and this is my personal experience that I identified in this part of the game. And the other people had different ones, and everyone was just, they portrayed those experiences, different ones for different people I spoke to, really realistically, to the point where people felt very empathetic to it. It was, I think, great, even though everyone said it made me cry so much I had to take a nap, and I loved it.
It was so great that I immediately had to cry myself to sleep.
Yeah.
Oof.
Yeah, that's so, I cried so much I loved it. That's everyone's reaction.
Yeah, when I played Life is Strange Before the Storm, I had had some life experiences shortly before that game came out that were very similar to that game, and I did a Let's Play of it, and when I got to the end of the bonus episode, I was crying, and then I found out that my tech setup had gotten screwed up, and I hadn't recorded the audio.
Oh,
and,
man.
You know, and you can't record a Let's Play without audio, so I actually waited a month or two, and I couldn't bring myself to put myself through that again so soon. And two months later, I went to record it, and this time I got the audio, and I was thinking, oh, well, you know, maybe I shouldn't be crying on my own YouTube channel. So I've seen this before. I know what's coming. I'll be fine this time. Nope, it was just as bad the second time, and I was sobbing at the end. And I was like, okay, I'm uploading this. This is what's going on my YouTube channel.
Live your truth.
Oh. If it makes you feel any better, I am constantly crying on the YouTube channel. I never stop. Actually, one of the best / worst things about having Let's Plays is when the developer will message us and be like, I watched your entire Let's Play. It was beautiful. Oh, I'm so glad you were able to appreciate these points. And all I can think about is how I like talked about my labia for 5 minutes. And I'm like, what, that whole thing?
Mm-hmm. Wow. 'Cause, okay.
We got messages from some of the Don't Nod team being like, I watched your thing. And I was like, great. Oh, great. Great. They're like, I loved it. I was like, oh, awesome.
Yay. So I have other videos and games on your channel that I want to ask you about, but I also want to go back to the question of how do you make the channel entertaining. But also, I'm wondering, you said that you choose games that will provoke dialogue and conversation. And I'm wondering how analytics comes into play, because YouTube gives you a lot of analytics about what videos are doing well and which videos aren't, and how you might use that to decide what videos to make in the future. And if I understand correctly, Stacey, you work with analytics even outside of YouTube as well, professionally. Is that correct?
Yes. So I work with analytics in a limited capacity at work. I work in marketing and social media. I have, and which is funny because like, they have a small YouTube channel, but it's like in such a different field and such a different place. Like, I remember being excited because I was like, oh, we're like almost up to like 1,000 subscribers. That's so exciting.
Yeah, but Stacey, you have grown, like, I think every time you tell me, you're like, yeah, we've grown 10,000% because of the things I do.
Yeah. Well, we've only put out 30 videos.
Yeah, but all the stuff, like, didn't you like grow everything by 150% this year?
Well, yeah. But I meant like we've somehow managed to gain almost like 1,000 subscribers off 30 videos.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Which is pretty crazy. But anyways, analytics for the channel. I feel like we obviously keep an eye on like our metrics. I think that you can have different opinions on this if you want. I feel like what we kind of do is we kind of take a look at, you know, what games are coming out that we're interested in that we think we would have a lot to say about. There's obviously ones that are like, you know, for sure we're going to play. For instance, Super Seducer 2.
Oh my God, that's the love of hate of my life.
Super Seducer, Life is Strange, you know, like, and anything by David Cage.
God, it's such a beautiful nightmare.
So there are always ones that really stand out to us in terms of, you know, we think that our audience would really like it based on what they've liked in the past. And then, you know, sometimes we end up getting lucky with some of the indie ones. Like when we played Firewatch and Oxenfree, those were games that not as many people had played at that point. I think maybe when we decided to play Firewatch, we saw that other people were playing it.
No. Firewatch we got before it came out.
Oh, okay.
And Oxenfree.
And Oxenfree.
No one was playing it. And I was like, I love this game so much, I'm going to make people like it.
Yeah, well, I had been keeping an eye on that for a while, remember?
Yeah.
And sometimes you don't know if they're going to do well. Like, we've definitely recorded games that we thought that people would think were very interesting, that just for whatever reason they didn't catch on, you know?
Yeah. And I'm like, why? Why don't you love this? But it doesn't make sense. But for me, I think when I'm making the video essays and theories and stuff, I go over the audience retention and see where it drops off and why, and I see, like, was I rambling too much? Was it just because I had an opinion or whatever else? And I also try to look at the analytics for Let's Play, seeing is there a part where people are getting bored or anything like that. So mm-hmm. in the future, I can know what type of editing I need to do for this specific game. Because different games require different editing. Like, you know, God of War, sometimes fast-forwarding through some shorter parts. Or when we did Remember Me.
Yeah.
I had to fast-forward through the long gameplay parts.
Which... Yeah, because there would be, like, really long combat sequences where there wasn't really much for us to say about it.
Yeah. And so I would go through and see, okay, I see people, like, getting bored with this long segment here, so next time when I edit, I'm going to make it shorter. But when it comes to... In terms of, like, choosing what we're going to play, I guess we have no idea and we're idiots. Yeah. And we just go, I want to do that one.
Yeah, so I think that when it comes to deciding what to play, you know, when people ask me, because I feel like people will reach out to us all the time and be like, hey, are you going to play XYZ? Are you going to play this game? Are you going to let's play this game? And sometimes I know for sure, like Life is Strange 2, obviously we were going to play that no matter what. But with other ones, sometimes I say, you know, it really depends on what else is coming out around that time. Mm-hmm. Because I work full time in addition to doing the channel. So our recording time is a bit limited in when we are able to do it. So we don't have time to just do every single game that we might want to play.
Yeah, other gaming channels or gameplay channels our size are able to have like 15 series out at the same time because the person who runs that makes their own schedule and they can do that full time. But we need to coordinate because Stacy is a normal human with a social life. And we can't do literally everything. And even if we could, asking us to literally sit at a computer all day talking to each other, I think we would go insane.
Yes. You know, usually we'll take a look at, you know, what do we think is interesting? What do we think that people would like to play?
There's also just the outside factor of life. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, there have been games that we've decided not to cover for the sheer reason of just we didn't have time. Like, games that we thought that up until, like, the last second we were going to play, and then we didn't end up doing it.
Just because of life.
Just because, you know, when we used to live farther apart, there would be times when, you know, there's a snowstorm that day. We can't record. Yeah. Like,
I can't get to you.
Yeah, so I guess what we're saying is we have no idea.
Yeah, I don't know.
You said you got lucky with some indie games like Firewatch, and your Firewatch theory video is, by multiple factors, the most popular video on your channel. To what do you attribute that?
When that game was being sent out, I remember this so clearly because I was so frustrated with other YouTubers until I realized this. Other YouTubers that I talked to, they were like, I don't understand why we didn't get to be with Delilah at the end. And I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? You weirdos. He's like, still married. Yeah. And they're like, what are you talking? And they were like, what are you talking about? Is he just, he left her. And I was like, that's not what happened. Turns out the other YouTubers I talked to, they opted for the stream version of the pre-release, which meant that they got a prologue free version of the game and they just went straight into the woods and had no idea about Ned's past. Like that whole part where you're reading about how they met, how they fell in love, and her slow deterioration of her mind, and you're like, oh my god, oh, like, they were in love.
It's like the beginning of Up.
Yeah, it's the beginning of Up.
At the beginning of
imagine if they cut off the beginning of Up and we just started with some annoying little kid, and everyone would be like, why is this grandpa such an asshole?
Yeah, why is he so grumpy all the time?
And you're like, you guys are monsters! He lost his wife! That's basically what happened. None of them had seen it, and then when the game unlocked, they were like, okay, I'll play the rest of the game, never having seen the prologue. And then a bunch of the reviewers had a completely different view of the ending, because they understood why, like, they wouldn't have ended up together. And it was like, oh, it's so good. And then all the YouTubers were like, it's so bad. And everyone's like, game journalism is a lie! But basically, we ended up with a bunch of people who watched it on YouTube who didn't feel fulfilled by the ending they saw, and so I was like, I have an alternate theory that I still think is valid, but kind of explains a few holes, and they were like, yes, this makes me feel better. Because that guy living in the mountains clearly was hanging out with Delilah because they were staring at each other from their posts to be whatever. But I always thought it was so fascinating how that choice of marketing completely changed the perception of that game.
Yeah, well, because it changes, like, the whole user experience for such a large group of people.
Yeah, so the people who are influencers on YouTube play it, say, I'm disappointed that the heterosexual people didn't get together because I was promised a woman, without knowing that Ned is still recovering from a very emotional and traumatic, I guess, not
relationship.
Even... relationship that isn't quite over, but it is because she's still alive, but she's not there anymore.
I had no idea that people had played the game without the prologue. That is one of the most impactful and framing elements of the game.
Exactly. Which I think is why there's such a big difference between the influencer opinion of the game versus the reviewer version of the game, because the reviewers got the full game all at once, while the influencers got that weird chunked up version.
But it still doesn't change the fact that Firewatch is an indie game. And in my own experience, which is very limited, when I put an indie game on my YouTube channel, it gets very little traffic because there's very little SEO around it. People aren't searching for indie games because they haven't heard of those games, unlike, say, Minecraft or Call of Duty. How do you balance mainstream games with indie games? And why was Firewatch an indie game so popular?
Firewatch had a lot of press around it because a lot of the people working on it were already well known.
Also, when it comes to indie games, it can be kind of hit or miss. Like Oxenfree was also a really big deal.
And it wasn't a big deal at release. It only became a big deal after a bunch of big YouTubers covered it.
But then you have, you know, like Her Story. Basically, I think that when it comes to an indie game performing well on YouTube, you kind of have, you know, does it get picked up by a bunch of popular YouTubers? Are there a bunch of other people playing? Like, it's kind of like almost like a perfect storm.
Is there already someone famous on the team that people are hyped up? Because for Her Story, it was made by somebody who had already worked on some of the Silent Hill games. So it was getting press from people who were like, oh, I work at Kotaku and I know this name, so I'm going to put an article on it because it's probably going to be cool, you know? It's not necessarily nepotism. It's more just a subconscious, I know who that person is. They have credibility, blah, 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 blah.
Well, it's kind of like, you know, we've got Death Stranding coming up from Hideo Kojima. Nobody fucking knows what's in that game. Everybody's hyped for it because it's Hideo Kojima.
Yeah.
Like, it could be, like, staring at a piece of shit on a plate, and, like, people would be like, it's Hideo Kojima!
But there's also things like Undertale that our friend Eric Hornbury, who is also an indie developer, he was on the bug testing team. He wasn't, like, helping him develop, I know. Toby Fox did it all by himself, I know. But he still needed bug testers. And Eric was one of the bug testers. He sent me a message being like, you need to play this game, Undertale. It's the best game I've ever played. And I was like, well, let me see a screenshot. And he's, and I was like, what the fuck is this?
I mean, we
and played... I was like, I'm not playing some fucking dumb RPG Maker game. Next week, like, cut to a month later, it was like the biggest game in the world.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I think...
But we've also played plenty of indie games that, like, were really great that just never took off for the same reasons, you know? So I don't think... I don't know that it's necessarily... Sometimes you hop on something because it's going to be... Like, the beginner's guide. Sometimes you hop on something because it's either... We're just interested in it, and then it just happens to get big. Or because the train has already left the station, and we're just kind of, like, hopping on board because we're seeing that there's, like, a bunch of popular people playing this thing.
Life is Strange was one of those games that became popular that we didn't know was going to become popular.
Yeah, definitely.
We played it after the first episode came out, but before the fandom really came
took
around.
Off, yeah. Yeah. So, and then fast forward 3 years later, holy crap.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Now, another game that has a sequel coming out besides Life is Strange is Super Seducer, a game about how to become a pickup artist and attract women to you for the sole purpose of getting laid. And I had never heard of that before. I interviewed Dr. Nerdlove earlier this year, and he told me about this game.
He already announced Super Seducer 3. No.
3?
Yeah, it's been already announced.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Super Seducer, the original game, was actually pulled off Kickstarter, and it doesn't seem like a game that I would expect, for lack of a better phrase, a social justice warrior to be playing.
What I really enjoy about that game, actually, one, it's really funny to play through it and just, like, rip on everything that's happening. It makes for a very fun playing experience. However, we also get to play through with the benefit of being women who have dated straight men, and to then give our feedback on, like, hey, like, that was not a very good piece of advice. Here's why. Here's what you should do instead. You know, and not like we're saying that we are, like, the ultimate resources on dating, but
I think it gave us a chance to have a dialogue.
Yes.
Where he says the things he says, and then we respond and say, well, I disagree with this, and I agree with this, and here's my reasons why. And it was able to have a dialogue. Because I think games like Super Seducer or Hatred or quote-unquote problematic games, they're going to exist whether we want them to exist or not. There's just... And I think the question...
And they should be allowed to exist.
And they should be allowed to exist. And I think sometimes, I'm going to skip ahead, where people ask, should politics be allowed in video games, or should this be allowed? Should this be allowed? I think we're asking the wrong question, because we simply put, we don't have the ability to not allow it. It's just not possible.
Yeah.
Like, logistically. And even if it was possible, who's to say that people are not going to allow what I think is right, too? You know, I don't trust that any sort of authority is going to be looking out for my interests anyway.
Yeah.
But I think the real question is, how should we respond to problematic media?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the real issue. I just came out with a video called Do Politics Belong in Video Games? And obviously, a bunch of people commented before even watching just the word yes or the word no. And I was like, actually, my thesis was maybe. Because I like to ask questions and actually go into it. Like, are male protagonists boring? The answer is, sometimes. Mm-hmm. Or do politics belong in gaming? And actually the answer is, it's not a matter of it belonging. It's a matter of it being there, whether you like it or not. And how can you respond in order to try and explain why it's problematic, so that either you can change people's minds or enlighten people so that they go, maybe the way I did it is wrong. Or just being aware that this fact that this thing is here, and you need to be aware that some people think this way in order to validate that other people saying, hey, like, people are racist. And everyone goes, no, they're not. And it's like, then why does this video game exist and people buy it and enjoy it? And they're like, oh, shit, you're right. People are racist.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, if we... Obviously, we don't have to play a game like Super Seducer, but the amount of conversation that opened up, you know, between, like, between us on the video and then also in the comments section of the video, I think it showed that, honestly, like, a lot of people, especially younger people, they look to YouTube videos as, like, a source of information, not just for comedy. And when we have these conversations about things, like, we're not just doing it as a, like, you know, like, circle jerk of social justice. Like, we're not just doing it to hear ourselves talk. Like, when we talk about mental health, like, we get messages from people that say, you know, oh, like, I saw your video where you talked about XYZ thing. I went to a psychiatrist. I got diagnosed. Now I'm on medication. Like, when we talk about things in Super Seducer, yeah, we're talking about dating and, like, we're having a good laugh at some of the things that are happening on the screen. But we also get messages from people that say stuff like, oh, I never considered how, like, this behavior that I've been socialized to believe is something that a man should do can actually be seen as really fucking creepy, like, because I never had, like, the female perspective on that.
Yeah, I think one of the main points we made about Super Seducer is technically a lot of the advice he gives is the correct advice, but his motive for the advice is counterproductive to making real human connections, because he says, compliment her hair. Or one of them is him helping his secretary, where he says, oh, I'm going to mentor you.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you resources into the business world.
Mm-hmm.
And if he was doing that as being like, I'm genuinely interested in you as a person and actually mentoring you, that would make you a fantastic person. But because his motive was to eventually get into a situation where sex was okay, and even though he was waiting for technically her, the secretary, to be open to him to have sex, he was still setting up parameters in which she was kind of being put into a cage of, okay, I have all the business contacts, I'm your mentor, if you go away,
you lose access
to all of this. And even though I think in his head he didn't realize he was building a cage, we were like, hey, you're building a cage. And maybe, possibly, people who were hearing him go, oh my God, I didn't realize I was building a cage. And he might even hear and go, you know what? I didn't realize I was building a cage. Yeah. I thought I was building an actual reason why somebody would like me. Yeah. So that's why I think, above the funniness and stuff, it's important to be able to look at these things, actually watch it and be like, these are the reasons why I don't like it. Instead of saying it shouldn't exist, because whether or not I want it to exist is irrelevant. It's going to.
Yeah. I feel like especially in dating also, a lot of people miss out on the wider conversation around power dynamics and how that can affect, you know, how different people perceive, like, who has the power in a relationship or even just in, like, a casual dating scenario, and, like, why certain gestures, like, setting up a mentorship for your secretary, although it might be nice, like, that is technically good, like, you're setting up a power dynamic in which you are in control, which is inappropriate to be mixing with a sexual relationship.
Some people might make the mistake of, now she wants to have sex with me, but it might actually be she feels like she's obligated to have sex with me.
Mm-hmm.
And some people might not realize that, and it's important to point out.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll, two, not saying Richard LaRuna is correct, but I give him credit for actually listening to feedback, and I think including some of our feedback for Super Seducer 1.
It was pretty...
I still disagree with the majority of what he did, but he was like, I listened to your feedback. It's like his first thing, and we put more diversity in, and I added in a female, like, version of trying to get
dudes. A female co-host, essentially.
A female co-host to give a woman's perspective, and he added in a character for when women want to seduce men.
Yeah.
All of his advice was still shit, but, like, he actually tried.
Yeah.
You know? Does that make sense?
Which was very interesting.
Which is why I think a lot of the people who he violently threatened, in a joking way, I don't know, who were like, you're just stupid, blah, 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 blah. You're all valid and you're allowed to do that, and I support you in saying that Richard LaRuna is a dummy butt. But he listened to the people who actually played his game and talked about it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and who kind of, like, responded seriously to what he was doing.
Yeah. He yeah. actually listened. Which, and I mean, nobody is obligated to do, well, by the way.
And, like, granted, I think what you would also add to that point is that, like, one, not everybody's obligated to do that. And two, that only works when somebody is interested in having, like, a logical, semi-logical, reasonable discussion.
Yeah, there I don't want this to be like, hey, oppressed people, have you tried talking about it?
No, 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 no.
Don't do that. Don't think that.
Yeah.
We're just putting that responsibility on ourselves and only ourselves as our own choice. Other people, feel free to call him a douchebag.
Well,
I support you.
And, like, if somebody is very clearly only interested in a bad faith debate and they're not interested in being open-minded and changing their opinions, there's absolutely no reason that you should have to, you know.
Yeah, at that point, just start showing pictures of farts.
Pictures of farts.
Yeah. This is only a very specific situation and there's no flat way of dealing with these things.
Yeah.
But for that specific type of dialogue, I think that's good. And same thing when we played Detroit Become Human. I think in some ways, David Cage and his team, because he allowed his team to be more involved in the writing, were able to portray a sense of helplessness and unfairness that a lot of people had never really experienced before.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it was a problem because he stole the ideas and feelings of the Black movement in the United States without giving credit and saying, like, it had nothing to do with that. So on one side, when we talked to Laura Kate Dale, she said, I was watching a bunch of different Let's Plays and people who were, you know, gay or a minority of some sort. At that one part where we had to put our hands up to the police,
yeah.
They said everybody who was not a straight white dude, like, peacefully stood there and waited.
Yeah.
But all the straight white guys she watched fought back.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, even though this game is dumb, that observation was valuable. And I think maybe, possibly, yeah. that could be something.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't actually played a David Cage game myself. Detroit Become Human looks like a game I would want to play, but when I read and hear about these problematic elements in it, it almost seems like something I don't want to be a party to. Is that valid?
I would still recommend it.
I think that the fact that the game came out, a lot of people might not have even known about the concept of appropriating somebody's struggles as a problem. Because even though we're giving David Cage shit for that, literally every single fantasy game does that.
Yeah.
Dragon Age, Mass Effect, like literally any world that they make up, they take exact allegories of things that happen to real marginalized groups. marginalized groups, and they apply it to elves, or they apply it to magic users, yeah. they apply it to that. We do it all the time. But David Cage put a few less layers in between it. And we were like, hey, I see what you're doing.
They're like, hey, wait, those robots are people.
Yeah. Wait, essentially. Is this about Black Lives Matter? But the truth of the matter is, we do it for everything. TV, movies, books. There's always somebody taking the struggles of real people who have gone through shit and putting it onto elves. And while that's great for a lesson, a lot of people from those groups feel like, how come my drama of and like struggles are cool enough for you to put in your story, but I'm not cool enough?
Mm-hmm.
When you see, like in Dragon Age, the elves go through, they're put into essentially ghettos, which is what the Jewish people went through, and they also get segregated like other minority groups have been through, they don't actually include Jewish people. They don't actually include Black people. They just take the cool story that's dramatic and lets people feel like they overcame something without actually including the people who actually went through that. That was a valuable lesson that people actually were able to say because of that game.
But to answer your question about whether you should play it, I would probably go back to our earlier point about how I think that with few exceptions, I would always say that it's okay to play things like that where there is some caveat of, oh, maybe this issue wasn't handled particularly as well as it could have been. I think that there are still some interesting things that the story does. I mean, the Connor and Hank storyline alone is extremely amusing and really fun to play.
Mm-hmm.
People love to rip on David Cage because he so many times, like, things in his games are just not executed very well, or the story has problematic elements, but his games have done a lot for making people see the value in, like, narrative driven stories and branching storylines. And
yeah, he's been a pioneer in that.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, obviously everyone can make their own decision as to, like, whether they want to play it or not. It's the same thing, you know, if you're going to watch a movie where, you know, there are, like, you know, where there's homophobia or racism, and it's like, can I enjoy the story without that? Everybody is allowed to draw their own line in the sand, mm-hmm. and say, like, no, there's a rape scene in this movie. I don't want to watch it. And that is okay.
Yeah, for me,
you know,
it's not even a political stance. I just can't watch rape scenes in movies for some reason. It just freaks me out way too much. And that's my line. Mm-hmm. And also, it's impossible, in my opinion, to make a piece of media that's free of problematic things.
Yeah.
Like, it's literally impossible to make a piece of media that doesn't have something in it that has an issue. What's important is to say, is when you see that piece of media make that mistake, is to say, hey, I don't like that. Because nowadays, we have social media. We have ways of communicating that idea and speaking up and saying, hey, this is wrong. So that piece of media has a way of fixing itself or making amends or whatever. Or, you know, if it's from the 80s and it's Indiana Jones, I guess when we make modern remakes of Indiana Jones-like stuff, we can be like,
we do better.
We do better.
Yeah.
We do better because when nowadays when people, you know, they make Lara Croft and Uncharted, they try to do it a little bit less racist.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe in 20 years, we'll have a Tomb Raider that doesn't break everything,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Oh, that's great. You're basically saying that the reason why I should play Detroit Become Human is the same reason why you play Super Seducer, because it's important to be aware of the problematic elements instead of just burying our heads in the sand and pretending that these games and the issues in these games don't exist. Otherwise, we lose the ability to identify those issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but at the same time, I want to make it clear that if you're tired and you don't feel like having to have every moment of your life being some sort of stance against problematic stuff, do what you want to do.
Yeah.
You know, you're allowed to do whatever you want.
Yeah.
So if all media has problematic elements, but at the same time, sometimes you're just too tired to engage with those elements, what games do you play when you don't want to engage with that media?
Stardew Valley.
And
World of Warcraft. Basically, anything that I feel is my safe space, which might not be other people's safe space.
Yeah, so I think what I would probably say is that I think everyone is going to have their own definite... because what for instance, like for me, I love watching apocalyptic dystopian fiction. It when all the things are horrible, everyone is dying, I feel at peace. Not everybody feels relaxed by watching a story like that. But for me, like that's what I... When I feel stressed out and overwhelmed, that's like what I want to watch. You know, it's the same thing with games. For each person, they're going to have their own, you know, like somebody might just want to like, you know, go like hide themselves and just like play COD or Halo.
Mm-hmm.
They might just want to shoot stuff. Maybe that's like what makes them feel good.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they want to go play with their friends in Overwatch. Maybe they want to just like create a farm in Stardew Valley. Or maybe they want to play a narrative game that they can just kind of, you know,
Identify with,
and even if it's not perfect, they still at least, you know, maybe they want to play Detroit Become Human because they really love stories about androids, and, you know, the racism allegories aren't going to bother them as much. I think everyone's going to have their own comfort level with different things and their own area that they identify as, like, this is what relaxes me.
Yeah, everyone has a different safe space, and that's okay. Yeah. Everyone has something that bothers them more than other things.
Yeah.
Like, rape Oh my God, I cannot do it. It really freaks me out. But people being ripped in half and their spines being held as a necklace, I'm like, oh, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. I don't have a logical reason for that. That's the way I am, and I'm just going to accept that I'm a fucking creep. So, mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes it's okay.
So everyone has their own safe spaces. Everyone has their own opinions. I'm sure they respond to your videos in a variety of different ways in the comments. They also engage with you on Patreon, on social media. What is it like working with that community? I mean, Stacey, not only do you work with analytics, you also work with social media. Is that correct?
Yeah. So I do social media stuff for like my 9-to-5 job. But in terms of the channel, I feel happiest when I'm being like pretty active on social media. I really like doing cosplay and, you know, taking pictures of like just cool things that I find, like outfits and whatnot. I've always enjoyed styling photos, so that's something that I really enjoy doing. But I think that what I really like about working with social media is that you can really kind of, when it's your social media, you can really kind of create your own community. So, and I think you would probably agree with this, Mari, that like there really is a different feeling to the community on YouTube versus say on our Twitter mm-hmm. or on our Instagram or on our Tumblr. Like they each have their own kind of flavor of what type of people you're hanging at. Like Tumblr, you know?
You never know.
You never know where you're going to get on Tumblr.
Tumblr, it's either someone's going to be like, you're a goddess, you're a queen, you're everything, you've been my entire heart. Or it'll be like, listen, I've listened to every one of your videos, and here's every reason why you should die.
Yeah.
And you're making the world a worse place. And I'm like, okay.
This is so specific.
And like, they'll know. They'll know every part of your weaknesses.
Yeah. So, I mean, and like the difference between like, for instance, like when we first started posting videos that actually had us in it on YouTube and how people reacted versus like when I post pictures of myself on Instagram and how people over there react, like, at least for me, I feel like the people that are on social media, not that the people on YouTube are like bad or anything, but I feel like it's just a wider mix. The people that are on social media, like if because our following is not, you know, like enormous, like mm-hmm. it's still pretty focused. I feel like the people that follow me on social media are so actively invested in like, being nice, I guess. Like
they're just nice people.
Yeah.
We love you.
Yeah.
I love seeing the same avatars pop up.
I know. I do too. It's like you get genuinely excited when you see.
It's you.
Yeah.
It's you, anime avatar.
Yeah. Yeah. And then people change their avatars or their names and I'm like, who are you?
What happened?
I don't recognize you. You know, I just feel like I've found such like a community on social media that also makes me feel so much more comfortable being myself. And that transfers over to the videos because there's definitely a difference in how comfortable I feel being myself now versus say like 4 or 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. I feel like, and I mean, obviously, I'm older than I was, but I also feel like the social media community has really allowed me to feel like, oh, hey, like these things about myself, you know, I kind of like to dress a little punkish. I like to dye my hair. Like I have a side shave and a nose ring, blah, 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 blah. You know, I've got like muscles and whatnot. And people,
Stacey's when they really strong and everybody loves it. They're obsessed with her muscles.
But it's like when I interact with people on social media about that and everyone's just so positive, it's hard not to think to yourself like, oh, hey, like these are things that people really like about me.
You know? It's hard to know when you're just having the feedback of yourself. You think, oh, this part of my body isn't good. But when you realize that when people are truly honest, and I know people are like, when people are truly honest, they're mean. No.
No,
they're
not.
When people are truly honest, they're like, actually, I'm deeply into your arm fat. And I'm like,
yeah.
I didn't know that. They're like, yeah, either people don't care or they're just really deeply sexually into it. So next time you look in the mirror, don't think about what you think about. Well, actually, no. Wait, that's wrong.
Wait.
Basically, social media validates my body and I love it. It's just, a lot of people think about things in a way that you never thought was possible, which makes you think, maybe I'm not as, like, socially unacceptable as I think I am. Does that make sense?
You know what it is? I think it's that, so I know that people say, like, don't look to social media for validation. What I would say, though, is that social media allows you to find your tribe.
Yeah.
That, like, so, you know, for instance, just using, like, myself as an example, but, like, so, for instance, like, I'm a buff, taller woman. So when I'm walking out in, like, the world, I might feel like, oh, like, there's not a lot of people like me. I go on social media, there's actually tons of people like me. Mm-hmm. They're just not in my immediate area. And when I can find them on social media, I all of a sudden feel less alone. And I also feel like, hey, I get to really embrace this thing about myself because, like, a lot of people actually really love it, even if you're not necessarily getting that, like, all the time in your day-to-day life.
Yeah. Yes. You said it way better than me. I was just like, feel good because people like you.
I'm very pleasantly surprised to hear you've had such a positive experience because people say Twitter is a cesspool. They say on YouTube, don't read the comments. But it really does sound like you have found your tribe.
Oh, we're not talking about YouTube.
Oh, YouTube is trash.
YouTube is trash. We're not talking about YouTube.
Actually, most of our comments are really nice. Like when I go on camera, I'm like, I wonder if people are going to be like, be mad that I'm fat. And they come in, they're like, thick queen. And I was like, yeah, I am. Thanks. And then when people nowadays, when people like yell at me for being fat, I'm like, that's okay. Like, you're allowed to not like it, but I think you might be overreacting.
Mm-hmm.
And I just realized that it's okay. And if somebody is going to be that mad about something so trivial, it's not about you.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
It's not about you at all.
Yeah. I mean, we're also coming at this after, like, over 5 years.
Yeah, we're sufficiently callous.
So I still remember, like, some of, like, the first rude comments that we would get, like, which weren't even, like, even anything very rude by, like, standards now. Mm-hmm. But, like, you know, at first I feel like it really hurts you. But now that I have built up more of, like, a supportive community around me, when people say shitty stuff, I'm like, oh, it's hard for me to take that as seriously as all the people on social media that, like, clearly support me and love all the things that I do, you know? Like, why should I listen to the one person? We sound so, like, enlightened and positive about this. Like,
but no, I actually have an emotional breakdown about it, like, all the time.
Yeah, I mean, I still have shitty days. You know, I don't want people to think that, like, oh, I just, like, run around, like, walking on clouds all the time, because that's definitely not true.
These are the things we tell ourselves when we feel like shit.
Mm-hmm.
So we're just telling you the positive things that make us feel better when we feel bad.
Yeah.
Good, because everybody has shitty days and we need to know where to look for our support network. And it's awesome that you two have one. Stacey, you mentioned that you like to do a lot of cosplay. I saw some amazing photos on your Instagram. Can you tell me more about that part of yourself?
Oh, thanks. I think the first one I ever did was actually Chloe Price from the original Life is Strange.
Yay.
Because you look exactly like her.
Because we act really similar. Like, I remember when we first played that game and we both were watching, like, you know, just Chloe being, like, just...
Playing with guns?
Playing with guns.
I know this girl. This is Stacey.
But just, like, you know, talking back to her parents, flipping the bird, like, you know, whatever. Anyways, she was the first one I did. I've also done, like, Lara Croft. I recently did one for Daenerys.
Wait, you got the recognition for being God of War.
Oh, yeah. So I actually didn't even buy anything for that cosplay. I just went in the bathroom and, like,
took the rawest kind.
Yeah.
The rawest.
I didn't buy anything. I literally just covered myself in I didn't even buy body paint. I just had a bunch of makeup. So I covered myself in, like, lipstick and, like, the wrong color foundation and, like, used, like, a shader. But Corey Barlog, who was the creative director for the new God of War game, he saw my picture and he thought it was cool, which was, like, you know, you're sitting there being like, oh my God,
this guy thinks I'm cool.
Yeah, it's something that I really enjoy doing. I don't have, you know, as much time or money to dedicate to it as I wish I could. I wish I could be one of those people who could take, you know, hours and hours out of their week to like hand make their own props. Most of what I have done is like the characters from Life is Strange because their clothes were already in my wardrobe. Mm-hmm. But it usually, if it's something simple enough that I'm like, hey, like I have a dress that would work, all I have to do is buy a wig, then I'll do it.
Yeah, but sometimes you make up stories for your cosplays too. Remember the flower punks?
Mm-hmm. There was a flower punks. I also did a like the rose quartz one where I like did the punk rock rose quartz.
Yeah, what if Rose Quartz was a punk?
Yeah, and everyone was like, oh, so she's Mystery Girl from Steven Universe.
It's like, no, it's a different character.
It's a different character.
Oh, see.
Yeah.
Do you also cosplay at conventions, or is it mostly on Instagram?
So I've cosplayed the one that I have, I've worn the Chloe Price cosplay to C2E2, mostly because it's the most comfortable and weather appropriate one for that time of year. We got invited to go to New York Comic Con for a panel that ended up getting waitlisted this past year. But we haven't really been to any other conventions, mostly just because of like time and money constraints. But I did get to wear it to C2E2, so that was cool.
Yeah, a lot of people asked for your photographs.
Yeah, I got my picture taken a bunch. I got to meet up with, like, some, like, you know, like, fans in person, which was, like, a really cool experience. So, I feel like it's so easy when you're, you know, just reading YouTube comments or, like, responding on social media to think, like, oh, this is still kind of this intangible thing that, like...
It's not real.
It's
oh,
not
no.
real. Like, are these people real? And then you go to a con and you meet a bunch of people and you're like, oh, wow, like, here's a 10-year-old that is really embarrassed to come talk to me because they've watched a bunch of our videos and they think of me as a cool person. And, like, that was a really, really... neat experience for me.
That sounds super sweet. Aw.
Yeah.
I have a couple of technical questions about your YouTube channel, and this one may be kind of selfish because you have amazing thumbnail art, and I don't. I simply take a, I take a screenshot from the game, I slap my logo on it, and I upload it, and that's it. And you have like actual original art that is attractive, it gets people to click through. How do you do it?
Anytime you see our characters in the thumbnail, that's Tess Young at The Chic Monster?
Yes.
Should I spell it? I don't know.
On Twitter.
On Twitter?
Sure, I'll put a link in the show notes.
Yes. Yeah, because spelled in a way that's fancy for me. She also is making Paranormal, which is a Geek Remix branded game, but all credit should go to her because she's fantastic.
We were pretty much just like, you can take our faces for it.
Basically, she just like asked, I need people to be in this video game. I said, okay, I'll ask around for people who I think would be a good fit.
So it's got like Manga Minx, Hoodie Panda, Laura Kate Dale,
Todd Slickburn.
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 That's not his last name. It's like...
I've been friends with Todd for so long, and I still call him Schlickburn because I thought it was funny, and I just genuinely think that's his last name now.
Anyways, it's like a bunch of, like, YouTubers and YouTube adjacent
people. YouTube and reviewers and reviewers and stuff like that. But anyway, but she does all the work, and it's amazing. She's supremely talented. Well, she, they, he, Tess goes by any gender pronoun, so don't worry about ever... worrying about that, but she's amazing, and it's just been her birthday, so if you guys want to follow her on Twitter and tell her happy birthday, belated, I think she'd really like that.
Yeah, so she does our character art, and she is also the one who has done our animated shorts, which is where she takes, you know, 30 to 60 second clips of the audio from our Let's Play series, usually when we're saying something particularly funny or just gross, and makes like a short animated video for it. All credit for those goes to her. Mm-hmm. We just say dumb shit on Let's Play and she turns it into something really cool looking.
So for the thumbnails, if you ever see Stacey or I's sprite, that's going to be Tess. If you just see a normal thumbnail and it looks good to you, that's because I have this Discord where I talk to a bunch of YouTubers who are way better at YouTubing than me. And I go, this is the general idea for my video, and this is my first draft of it. And they'll go, okay, make this bigger, make this smaller, make the color gradient different, bring up the contrast, and like do all these things until I have a completely different thumbnail that looks nothing like it originally started. And I go, thanks guys, because I'm so bad at it. There's so much, like, if I'm left alone, I can make a passable thumbnail devoid of any of Tess's work, because for, you know, the theories like Delilah's Dark Secret, like, I made that thumbnail, but I needed a lot of help in terms of feedback. Yeah, so I guess help from other people is the answer. Getting feedback from other people. But don't ask for feedback from people who watch your videos, because the people who watch your videos already want to watch your videos, and that's a good thing. You want to ask it from somebody who is your friend.
Like a more neutral source.
Yeah, who understands what clickability is, because sometimes people want to be artistic with thumbnails and be like, well, this represents this and this is whatever. Thumbnail art is an entire genre of its own. And I know that some people like to resist certain things, but I try to think of it as this is just a different type of art with a different goal.
Mm-hmm. So, well, it's art, yes, but if it's doing what it's supposed to do, it's marketing.
Yeah.
And advertising.
Yes.
You're creating an ad.
I'm creating an ad, basically. I'm trying not to be too gross about it by being like, look at this butthole.
Yeah.
Or something.
Boobs.
Yeah, boobs in the thumbnail. Check it out. Like, I'm trying to be, here's what it is. Here's an interesting hook on it. It looks nice and clean when I feel like trying. And, yeah, like those thumbnails for like, what politics and video games, or is this what men want? That took me, I think, an hour of taking feedback to understand what the format of those thumbnails would even be.
Yeah.
With the light background, close up of a video game character's face, bright, black bar behind brightly colored letters. My first draft of that looked literally nothing like that until finally I got to this very simplistic yet colorful version of title, face, background. So Is that helpful, or was I just rambling?
No, that was helpful. I think the answer to my question is I need to find somebody who's better at me to do this for me.
No. You need somebody who can help you take feedback in a way that they can also understand. Basically, other YouTubers.
It sounds like you almost have a mastermind group with that Discord. People who have similar goals and experiences, but who bring unique perspectives and can help you achieve your potential.
Yeah, because they don't give a shit if I like them or not. They're just going to tell me.
But you know what? Like, for anyone who's listening to this and who's thinking like, oh, I don't know a handy YouTube cabal that I can ask about my thumbnails, just try looking at thumbnails and seeing like what looks like what catches my eye, like what looks appealing, and not thinking about it from the perspective of obviously like trash thumbnails with just like boobs in it, but like, you know, what type of text catches my eye, what type of colors, you know, there's obviously, you know,
and try not to think of it as like, I hate it when this YouTuber does this. Be neutral when looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be skeezy about it. But also, there is the ability to find communities. Like, when I first started launching all this stuff and, like, trying to learn as much as possible about editing and stuff, I joined a lot of communities. The Hidden Black Forums, / Let's Play on Reddit, and a bunch of other places. And from those places, I was able to make friends that helped me to this day. And also, even for not thumbnails, just for anything, like, I talked to Todd about the politics and video games thing because I knew what I wanted my point to be, but I was worried that it was going to come across wrong, and I knew Todd knew
me. He's pretty articulate about that stuff.
And he knew me enough to know what I was trying to say, and so he read over it, and he was like, okay, this point, I know what you're trying to say, and you say it, but it could be seen like this, so let's change these words around. And so getting feedback from somebody who understands you is really important.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I mean, on the feedback train, though, like, I mean, I do the same thing for my cosplay photos.
Yeah.
Like, I have a couple different people that I will send, like, either unedited or lightly edited photos to. Like, usually it's just when I'm trying to figure out, like, for instance, the God of War photo, when I'm trying to figure out, like, what makes this look the best. Because sometimes, you know, if it's your own work, it can be hard to see, like, what to an outside perspective makes this look the best. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I have a couple different people that I will send photos to and say, like, you know, like, which one do you like better? Or, like, which one do you think the lighting is better? Would you make it darker? Would you change the filter? Like, et cetera, et cetera. And I feel like, you know, in any line of work, like with writing, with YouTube, with photos, whatever, you know, getting outside feedback, it can not only help you be better, it can also be really encouraging. Because sometimes when I've done stuff and I'm like, you know, I'll look at it and I'll be like, hey, I think this is really good. And then I start to doubt myself and think like, ah, no, like everyone's going to think this is dumb. And then I show it to somebody else and they're like, hey, change this one thing. It looks great. Like, you should feel really good about this, you know?
Yeah. So finding a community, I feel like, helps a lot. And I understand that that sounds difficult.
And vague.
And vague. Difficult and vague. But that's what I did. I just did a lot of Googling, a lot of trying to figure things out. Maybe I got lucky and found the right people at the right time. But I think there's always going to be a community. Probably now there's probably like Discords for people who are small YouTubers. Mm-hmm. There's always going to be something, you know?
Oh, that's a great point. I am, by training and trade, a writer, and I always have an editor. And if I don't, I find a peer to help me before I publish an article. For some reason, I've never done that on YouTube, and I don't know what sort of conceit this is, but it never occurred to me. Possibly because there is always such a rush to get videos out, to produce so much content, and to be the first one out there. I feel like if I were to have somebody looking at my videos prior to publication, I would miss those deadlines.
Yeah, don't do it for that. Get it out. Get it out as fast as you can.
I feel like what you could do, though, is if you have somebody whose opinion you value, showing them something after the fact and saying, like, how could I have improved this for the future? There's still value in that. Mm-hmm. Even if you can't have somebody, you know,
don't have anyone proofread it, though. That's just, no, it takes too long.
Yeah.
Yeah. Get it out. Yeah. For YouTube, just, even if it's trash, get it out.
I mean, that brings up the question of your own channel's rate of production. You have so many videos and you upload so frequently. How do you find the time to do it all?
Well, we record for a few hours every weekend. And then I cut it up and edit it and just have one of those a day. And then I try to take the time where I have something a little bit more thought-provoking and edited once a week. So sometimes I can't get that done simply because either the topic is...
Takes longer.
Yeah. Like the politics of video games, when I was like, I gotta do this right.
Yeah.
And it takes a lot of thinking and stuff. But I think that's what I try to get, one a day.
I think that what also helps is that not all of our content is like scripted content.
Yeah.
Because there's no way we would be able to do a scripted video 7 days a week.
I would die.
It would take way too long. So by balancing content between, you know, like let's play videos, mm-hmm. which is, you know, like the two of us like having a discussion over games, which like is somewhat edited. And you know, scripted content, and then sometimes we'll do shorter videos, mm-hmm. such as, you know, like quick looks, or we used to call them shitty looks, but YouTube's algorithm doesn't like the word shit anymore.
Yeah.
But by balancing all those different types of videos, we're able to adhere to, you know, 5 to 7 times a week,
mm-hmm.
While not making the editing load so high that it's impossible.
I wish I had a better setup that would allow less editing. For example, I don't do reaction cam or face cam shots in my Let's Plays because my setup for doing that is very laborious. And I've seen some more elaborate and admittedly expensive setups that just do it all at once. And I wish I could splurge on one of those, but I just haven't
yet. We've never done face cams.
No, never.
Why is that?
Because we're ugly.
Because, yeah. horribly ugly. No, I mean, because to have two people with two separate face cams it just like the amount of, one, the amount of work involved, two, the fact that normally we're just kind of like bumming around in our pajamas, picking our noses. I don't know. It was just never something that we really wanted to do.
Also, the thought of editing my own face for hours. Oh my God. Yeah. No way. No way. I would hate it.
Yeah.
I would hate it. And
most people hate the sound of their own voices, and we get over that.
I'm not over it.
It took me years to get over my voice. I don't want to go through it again.
Yeah.
Can edit our own, like, weird
vocal tics?
Oh, yes, God. Yes. I listen to my own voice and I want to die. But when we do our sponsor videos, I'm like closing my eyes being like, let it be over. But, and also it's a lot of extra work and we would have to get lighting. We would have to get lighting in front of us and we have to put on makeup. And I know people are like, well, just be natural. I'm like, okay, sir, you don't know what you're talking about. Being natural is a nightmare. Because I can just be myself out in public and in the world, but for some reason I'm gonna be thinking about how I'm sitting, how my body looks, how I'm doing things.
And
you know?
Another thing that I feel like people don't take into account is that a lot of times your reaction on camera gets picked apart. Or people feel obligated to ham for the camera.
Oh, yeah.
Which is never something that I wanted to do. When we play the games, I feel like we try to keep it as real as possible. Mm-hmm. Like, if we're shocked by something, we'll say we're shocked. But if we're not, like, we don't pretend to be. We don't pretend to find things funny if they're not. And, like, we try to share how we really feel. And I don't know if there was a camera on us, if we would feel obligated, you know, obligated to even just like put on makeup on a Saturday, like.
Mm-hmm. Or put on a bra.
Yeah, put on a bra. Like, who wants to do that?
Nobody.
No, I see your point. I think there is a tendency to exaggerate and overreact. When I did my Let's Play of Oxenfree, that's the only game I've ever done a face cam for. And it's mostly just me sitting there staring at the computer screen because I don't get visibly emotional over games. I'm having an emotional reaction, but, you know, it doesn't necessarily come across in my face.
And there have been times where we played. I think another thing that makes me hesitate to ever do something like that is because, like, there have been, I can remember specific instances where I'm sure they did it to you too, but I can only think of the ones with me where, like, where I did not react the way that people thought I quote unquote should to something that was happening in a game. And people got, like, really upset. Like, there were times in the original Life is Strange where, so, like, sometimes when upsetting things happen, I don't cry. I just kind of disconnect and shut down and just don't say anything. And some people got really upset with me about that because, I don't know, they assumed that I either didn't care or that I wasn't. I wasn't reacting the way that they felt that I should for a moment that was very serious. And
you didn't even do anything.
I just did nothing.
She did nothing, and that was wrong.
I can't imagine how that would be exacerbated with a face cam.
I think there's also an additional pressure because dudes can get on a face cam and
look like garbage.
I mean, Shane Dawson put a shirt that doesn't have a hole in it for when you're recording. I mean, go ahead.
When I did my Oxenfree video, I was wearing my bathrobe.
Yeah.
See?
Yeah. See?
And that's fine. If I did that with greasy hair and they'd be like, oh, God.
Yeah.
What is that?
I want to ask about another genre of video that if I'm understanding correctly, you have an interest in. On your Patreon, which is patreon.com/geekremix, you have a goal where if you raise enough money, if you raise $1,500 per month, you will do a paranormal show with ghost hunting, spellcraft, and summoning demons. How does that fit into the Geek Remix brand of games?
Just want to do it. I want to do a ghost hunting show, but, like, I obviously know that it's stupid, but kind of take it seriously, but kind of not. In my mind, correct me if you want to do it differently, I want to do ghost hunting, and then every once in a while we spot a ghost, and I edit in, I don't know, something like Donald Trump's voice, and we're like, ah, get out of here! We gotta go!
I think that we were looking at it as like a kind, like something that splits the, like, between like humorous and serious. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. That there's I want to actually go to, you know, a haunted place in Chicago, but at the same time, take it seriously. But also, just in case the ghosts get mad, don't be too mean. You know, I don't believe in ghosts, but if they do, and respect, you know, not take it too seriously.
And spell casting, does that imply that you are Wiccan?
I like to do witch things sometimes because it makes me feel better. That's the extent of it. Sometimes when I'm feeling bad, I cast a witch spell, and I don't know if it works or not, but
Mari,
I feel better.
Mari wrote out that Patreon goal.
Yeah, I did.
I see how it is.
And it makes me feel better. And sometimes I see, like, posts on Tumblr about, like, LGBT plus protection spell, and I feel like even if it doesn't work, sometimes people like to do things because it makes them feel better. And that would be fun. Just be like, hey, guys, here's a spell just for ace people. And that would be fun. That would be nice. Just be like, I'm thinking of you.
So, Stacey, if you could have written your own goal, what would it have been?
I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying that I wouldn't also be interested in doing those things. But no, I'm not Wiccan, and I do not cast spells. I do not believe in ghosts.
I don't believe in ghosts either, but what if they do? You just got to be nice just in case.
No.
Fine, be rude to the ghost. Get cursed.
Yep.
Awesome.
I feel like we would have a very good dynamic of, like, one of us is taking it a little more seriously than the other one.
Yeah, I start off as a joke, but then later I'm like, well, you can't say that. They're going to be so mad.
You know, we could be like Mulder and Scully.
Yeah. You are like
I would
Scully.
Totally watch that.
Right?
Oh my gosh.
I guess it would be like BuzzFeed Unsolved, but actually more respectful about
Listen,
dead people.
I know my role.
Wow. So we have talked about so much of your body of work today. We've talked about Instagram, cosplay, social justice, Let's Play, Patreon, ghost hunting. I've learned so much in the past hour, and also from your videos. I mean, I didn't get to mention this earlier, but just the video about do politics belong in video games, or, you know, when people say get politics out of video games, it never really occurred to me which politics they're talking about, and that there are two sides or more. And I really appreciate that you're playing games that encourage discussion, not only among the two of you, but among your viewers. You really are bringing up topics of conversation and thought that might otherwise go unnoticed, and that is really something valuable.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. So remind our listeners where they can find you on Twitter, on YouTube, on Patreon, etc.
So our channel is, of course, Geek Remix on YouTube. You can find our Patreon at patreon.com/geekremix. My social media, Stacy, is at Geek Remix a lot on Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr.
And my Twitter is at Geek Remix, and it's the same for Tumblr and Instagram. I don't post as much as Stacy on Instagram, so if you want someone to follow on Instagram, Stacy's your girl. She posts the coolest shit, and I'm like, I'm never gonna keep up. I'm just not gonna post. So I do most of my social media on Twitter, where I make dumb jokes and yell about social justice a lot. I try and be like, all right, don't tweet again about social justice today.
Just make it farts or
just
something.
Say something about my dog. Oh my God, did you guys see this? And I'm like, oh, I can't stop myself.
Awesome. Well, there will be links to all of that in the show notes found at polygamer.net. Stacey and Mari, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much. You. It was really great to meet you.
Yeah, you have a beautiful voice. Mm-hmm. Not in a...
Oh.
But just really nice.
It can be creepy. I wouldn't mind.
Okay, yeah, all right.
Yay. I should also say thank you to previous Polygamer guest Angela O'Hara, who recommended I reach out to you to be on the show.
Oh, thank you, Angela.
Yay.
This has been Polygamer, a GameBits production. Find more episodes, read our blog, or send feedback at polygamer.net.
I'm always uncertain when I approach people who have such a popular platform of their own, because I feel like you can already talk about yourself all the day on your own channel. Why would you do it on mine?
Well, let me tell you something beautiful. It's called imposter syndrome, where no matter how successful you are, you still feel like trash.
Yeah, I still question. I wake up every day and I'm like, nothing I do matters. And then I'm like, oh, that is a blatant falsehood.
No matter how many times people are like, you really helped. And I'm like, this isn't real.
Yeah.
It doesn't count.
Well, that's why, you know, I mean, we didn't really get into this like too much, but like when I met people at C2E2, that was like one of the things that it really like, I was like, oh, shit, like, these are real people, which sounds so stupid to say, but I think sometimes you really do convince yourself that you're just kind of, like, shouting at numbers on the internet, and it's, and then you get, when you get individual messages on, like, Instagram or, like, whatever, where people are talking about their specific experiences, you're just like, oh, they're real people. And then the next day you forget all over again and you're back to being a pile of trash.
Yeah, it's a beautiful cycle.
Yeah.
So we just need constantly people in real life to always be telling us that we're amazing. Otherwise, we will want to die. I just need to be constantly fed positive things all day.
Well, I'm so happy that Polygamer was able to serve that purpose for one day at least.